Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Major Mystery. It's been a while since I've gotten some time to record for you guys, so I thought I'd set some time and record a bunch of episodes for you guys, so you guys will have more content to listen to. Today's case is going to be a two-parter featuring the Amber Alert Program and the Golden State Killer. Let's dive in. The Amber Alert Program, also known as the America's Missing Broadcast Emergency Response, was done because Amber Renee Hagerman went missing on January 13th, 1996, while on a bike ride with her brother. She's playing in an abandoned parking lot. Her brother is beside her. Ricky, Amber's brother, decides to leave her alone, letting her play by herself. She is then abducted and found 4 days later, unfortunately dead. A witness to this crime, Jim Cavill, stated that he noticed a black pickup truck belonging to a stranger pull out, jump out, and grab Amber. Her autopsy revealed that not only was she beaten, her throat was slit, and she had been sexually assaulted. The autopsy also stated that she was kept alive for 2 days after she was initially taken. This case is so frustrating because not only is it a child abduction, this is before the Amber Alert had taken place. You don't hear that buzzing alert on your phone that says a child has been kidnapped. This is before that. This is before that program was even invented. And unfortunately, there are no leads. Her killer is never captured. Her killer is never caught. Amber never gets justice for her murder. Diane Simone created the alert program so that kids have a fighting chance of being found after abduction. The criteria of an active Amber Alert are: law enforcement must confirm that an abduction has been taking place, a child must be at risk of serious injury or death, there must be enough descriptive information of child capture or captor's vehicle to issue an alert, and a child must be a minor under the age of 17. Since the beginning of this program, many law enforcement teams have changed the criteria for an active Amber Alert, such as Schuyler's Law for West Virginia, parental abductions. There are child abduction response teams now. And Amber's parents had asked for tougher laws to be taken place for child abductions and for sex offenders. And this is for People Against Sex Offenders issuing a new law and a registry. Before 1996, there was no registry for sex offenders. This is signed into law by former presidents Bill Clinton and George W. Bush. They also create the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Arlington police are still getting tips about this case, even though the case is growing colder. And it's still cold. The Amber Alert Program was originally used for news programs, but because it is 2020, most Americans don't watch the news anymore. Most Americans can't even afford basic cable. So what they did to adapt to this and to adapt to the growing norm with the social media is government alerts are always blasted out through cell phones. They put Amber Alerts on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat. Because of the growing form of social media, they have to have more and more access to find these kids and to get these kids back to their parents and back to a safe home and a safe environment. Because 2020 has been a tremendous year and a spectacular year and a very traumatic year for most Americans, most Americans' homes are sprayed with cleansers, disinfectants, Clorox, to protect their families, to protect their homes, to protect their work environments. And I don't know about you, but I'm tired of those scents. I'm tired of this same generic Clorox bleach smell, or the same generic Fabuloso smell, or the same generic Windex smell. My friend Linnea gave me some scents to try out, and I have fallen in love with them ever since. My favorite one is the lavender lemongrass, and it's so soothing, it's so comforting. I just spray it around my studio, and it cleans, and it disinfects, and it smells like lavender, and it smells like home for me. It doesn't smell like harsh chemicals, but it cleans and it disinfects just like these harsh chemicals, just like Clorox, just like Lysol, just like Windex, Fabuloso, what have you. But it leaves you feeling refreshed and vibrant and loved because you're smelling a scent that is different. It's warm, it's inviting, it's comforting. And you feel a lot safer and a lot more protected when your home smells safer. It just triggers the brain to think that you're in a safe environment, you're in a safe space, your anxiety goes down, and it's wonderful. There is going to be a link in the description box for her Etsy shop down below. I highly recommend you try her out. I can't get enough of the scents. I literally have boxes and boxes of all these scents that I have tried and have loved, every single one. There's feminine scents, there's masculine scents, there's nature scents, there's cookie scents, there's just scents of every kind. That way your home is refreshed, it's vibrant, and it doesn't smell like harsh chemicals. Naya by Linnea. Buy them now. On to part two of the episode. The Golden State Killer. I'll Be Gone in the Dark, written by Michelle McNamara. One Woman's Obsessive Search for the Golden State Killer, with an introduction by Gillian Flynn and an afterword by Patton Oswalt. This book is incredible. I actually read the book on Amazon before I actually got access to my physical copy. And Michelle McNamara is such a talented writer. Just felt so enthralled in the book that it didn't even take me that long to read, but it's just like every detail, I fixated on every detail of this guy that terrorized California for years and years and years, and it's just, he's finally caught, and it's all because of her, and I think that's truly spectacular. For more than 10 years, a mysterious and violent predator committed 50 sexual assaults in Northern California before moving south, where he perpetrated 10 sadistic murders. Then, he disappeared, eluding capture by multiple police forces and some of the best detectives in the area. 3 decades later, Michelle McNamara, a true crime journalist who created the popular website TrueCrimeDiary.com, was determined to find the violent psychopath she dubbed the Golden State Killer. Michelle pored over police reports, interviewed victims, and embedded herself in the online communities that were as obsessed with the case as she was. All Be Gone in the Dark, a masterpiece McNamara was writing at the time of her sudden death, now updated to include a revised afterword and the coverage of the Golden State Killer's arrest, offers an atmospheric snapshot of a moment in American history and a chilling account of a criminal mastermind and the wreckage he had left behind. It is also a portrait of a woman's obsession and an unflagging pursuit of the truth. Utterly original and compelling, it has been hailed as a modern true crime classic, one that fulfilled Michelle's dream, helping unmask the Golden State Killer. This book is intense. I actually had to listen to it a couple of times on Audible because it was just... the narrator did such a fantastic job with it, and it's just, Michelle McNamara is such a talented writer that all of her words just completely spoke to me and charmed me over, and it was just a fascinating read, and to see him be caught, and to see him go through this trial on court TV, it was just fascinating. And I'm just like, I know you. You're the guy that was the Golden State Killer. And it's just fascinating to just, like, watch him be on trial that was unfortunately delayed due to COVID-19. And it was just watching him be on trial and watching him play this frail old man when he was a sadistic criminal. It's just fascinating. It was just fascinating to me to watch his mind at play, to watch his mind go from, oh, I'm a 20-year-old and I'm terrorizing California, to, oh, I'm 72. I can't stand because I'm older, and I can't speak for myself because I'm older. So it was just fascinating watching this guy play the crowd to get the quote-unquote sympathy plea. And it was just a very interesting case. Unfortunately, Michelle McNamara died while writing this book, so her team, consisting of Billy Jensen, Paul Haynes, and Patton Oswalt, this book was published posthumously. And she writes the subject profile as a white male at 5'10", with a slender athletic build, size 9 to 9.5 shoe, type A blood, and this was found out during a burgled home. She profiled that he was a non-secretor, so this guy had some, let's say, some shortcomings in his life. He can't rise to the occasion. She profiled that he was physically agile and capable of scaling fences due to how he's escaped, his team, his crew, and multiple detectives. At the age of his terror, between 1976 and 1984, she profiles him to be the ages of 18 to 25, and then in 2018, she profiled him to be between the ages of 60 and 75, which was deemed accurate because when Joseph James D'Angelo was caught and captured and arrested, he was 72. She profiles him as having blonde brown hair, blue or light-colored eyes. She said that he would be exceptionally small. Again, this is his shortcomings at play. The psychological profile is built by Leslie D'Ambrosia. And I am so sorry, Leslie, that I butchered your name. She profiled that his emotional age would be between the years of 26 and 31. So old enough to know what he's doing, old enough to know that what he is doing is wrong and illegal, but not old enough to fully stop himself and to think, how do my actions have consequences, and how are these consequences going to affect me? Leslie profiled him to be in good physical condition, and that he would dress well, but not well enough to stand out. She believed that he started discovering himself and became a peeping Tom at the bottommost rung, and she thought that he would start by watching others undress and by being a peeping Tom himself. She profiled that he would have extensive knowledge about police work and investigative work, which is true because he was a Navy veteran and a former police officer. And he was charged with 13 counts of kidnapping, as well as abductions, as well as the 8 counts of first-degree murder. And this was all due to DNA evidence that was captured from the DNA test 23andMe that one of his kids or grandkids had taken in order to find out about himself. That's how they figured out it was Joseph James D'Angelo. Unfortunately, D'Angelo could not be charged for the 1970 rape cases due to the statute of limitations being run out. D'Angelo, at the time of his crime spree, 1974 to 1986, he had a bunch of names going on, such as the East Area Rapist, the original Night Stalker due to him and Richard Ramirez running around at the same time, Priscilla Ransacker, the East Bay Rapist, and lastly, the Diamond Knot Killer. And this is due to him being a Navy veteran and knowing how to intricately tie knots and how to be able to capture his victims. And he terrorized his victims even long after he, quote unquote, vanished from their lives, leaving messages and phone calls and voicemails on various machines. DNA evidence links him to this crime spree throughout California. And it said that he was a GED match from discarded family trees, and that was how they figured out that it was him. So he had worked as a police officer in the task force specifically looking for him. How's that for an irony? He's on this task force and he knows who he's looking for. He knows that it's him. He knows that he could potentially do something about this. And he does nothing. At the time that he asked to be on this task force, he says, or is said about him, that he is extremely overqualified to work this task force. With all the commendations that he has, with all the years of his Navy pursuits, and through all the years of him just being a cop, he was too overqualified. In 1979, he ended up getting a 6-month probation for stealing two things from the evidence locker. Two things that could have tagged him as the Golden State Killer. Dog repellent and hammer. This, I think, because it's 1979, is a huge red flag taken against the police and against the state of California itself. This is a lack of police work. And I know that they're running wild and trying to figure out who this guy is when he's literally under their noses. So, a mere 2 months after this red flag is discovered, he's married. He becomes married. And he ends up cooling off after all of this. And he simply disappears into a modest life and lays low. This is a long cooling off process, especially for a serial killer. He stayed in this house for 30 years. He was found guilty and is currently serving a life sentence in the state of California. His infamous quote, "You'll be silent forever and I'll be gone in the dark," is the last thing said during the trial. And I thought it was a very interesting statement due to it being linked to him all this time. It's just simply fascinating. And I'm going to end this episode here, so I can give you guys some time to read over and possibly get the book, I'll Be Gone in the Dark, by Michelle McNamara. I highly recommend it. It is such an intriguing read. I recommend also getting it on Audible. You guys know how much I love Audible. Audible has different ways of making you see a book other than just a physical copy. Audible ends up being really worth it if you ask me. Because not only do I have the physical copy, but I read it on Audible. It was just like, I felt like I heard more details than what I was reading and what I was bringing in. And it's just fascinating that it was just a different tone of a book. But I highly recommend reading it. And I definitely highly recommend Audible. It's a great, great source. I also recommend Naya by Linnea in Little Etsy Shop, so you can shop local, shop safe. This is Major Mystery signing off. Everybody, enjoy your day. Happy holidays.